there's no right or wrong way to snowboard. You know, if you just want to go out and build cheese wedges and do that, that's sick, man, as long as you're having fun. But for me, it's more about getting to a new face, a new mountain, a new location, and just seeing how you can work with kind of what Mother Nature's given you and try and have a good time and inspire others.
All right, welcome back, or welcome to the Finding Mastery podcast. I'm Michael Gervais, and the whole design of these podcasts are to sit down with people who are extraordinary at what they do, extraordinary how they think, and we want to deconstruct and better understand how they've organized their life and their internal life to be able to pursue mastery. And what we're really looking to do is to search for what they're searching for and to see if we can understand their psychological framework, which is how they understand themselves and the world and events, and then also dig to understand the mental skills that they've used to build and refine their craft. Finding Mastery is brought to you by listening. This is exactly what their app does. It helps you listen to books and content that you might not be able to sit down and actually have the time to read. There was a time early in my career where I remember sitting in the back hallways of my university and being in the library for hours, reading all of the sports psychology literature and research that I could get my hands on. I loved it. I cherished it. The field of sports psychology is just absolutely on a bender right now. It is growing so fast. It is nearly impossible to keep up with all of the research that's coming out. So that's why I love what listening is doing. It's a game changer for me. So the listening app, it lets me listen to anything that's in writing while I'm on the go. Everything from academic papers to books, PDFs, web pages, articles, anything that I put in their app, it reads it to me. It narrates to me. And plus their AI is great. The way that the interface sounds, like, of course, it's not a human that's reading, but it kind of, the AI is so good of what they're doing. It just works. And then there's also this note-taking function. They know that people like us like to take notes. And so it's as simple as when I hear a key idea, I instantly press a button and that section is saved. They've done a really nice job with this product and they've got a great offer for us. Usually they only give a 2-week trial, but because you are listening to Finding Mastery, you get a whole month for free. Check that out, a whole month for free. So I want to encourage you to go check it out. listening.com/findingmastery or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get started. Again, it's listening.com/findingmastery. Or use the code FINDINGMASTERY at checkout to get 1 month completely free. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Hims. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing simple, convenient, and affordable access to science-informed treatments for erectile dysfunction, known as ED. They also are servicing hair loss, weight loss, and more. Health struggles like ED, they're common, but they can be hard to talk about when it comes to finding a solution. That's why Hims has been a game changer for so many men. The entire process is 100% online. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option for you. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free in a discreet package. No waiting rooms, no pharmacy visits, and no insurance is needed. Plus, you can manage your plan directly on the Hims app. You can track progress and learn more about your conditions and how to treat them from leading medical experts. If you or a loved one has been struggling with ED, I really want to encourage you to go check out Hims. I know ED often has a psychological component to it as well. So be sure that you're stacking some psychological best practices into your daily routine. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/findingmastery. That's Hims, HIMS.com/findingmastery for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/findingmastery. Disclaimer, hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. Okay, this week's conversation is with Jake Blauvelt. And he's one of the best all-around snowboarders in the world. He's just really smooth. When you watch his videos of what he's been able to do, he's got this creative, effortless-looking style. And you know, it's that approach that's lifted him into being one of the best flat out and recognizes the best in the world. Jake's career started like most other snowboarders, traveling from contest to contest around the world, riding half pipe and slope style events, and eventually even winning the Burton US Open slope style in 2004. It's one of the most prestigious and recognized events in snowboarding. It's legit. But then there was a transition. And this is the part of the conversation I was really interested to learn from him, is he was heading down one path and then that path wasn't working for him. How did he pivot and transition into a new career path, a new lifestyle? And it wasn't long before he realized that he just had a different calling. And it was his style and his capability on a snowboard that really belonged in the backcountry. So instead of inside of pipes and structured lines, he had a more creative approach that the canvas of the backcountry, the uncharted terrain, was something that he was better fit for. His chips were on the table and he pushed them in and he did something that is extraordinary. So now he's used his craft, snowboarding, and he sees himself as an artist. And, you know, each turn that he makes, each expression that he has is coming from within, and he's trying to fit what he feels and thinks and sees inside of him and express it externally. And in this conversation, we get into everything from how he approaches risk, how he trains confidence, how he aspires to live, and how he's organizing his life to live in a state of flow more frequently. So Jake is true to himself. And I just really appreciated his willingness to be open and to express and to find the words to articulate what's deep inside of him. And with that, let's jump right into this conversation with Jake. Jake, how are you?
Yeah, doing well, man. How you doing, Mike?
Yeah, fantastic. So you live a very unconventional way of living. You have committed and chipped in at a relatively early age to snowboarding, but there was a transition that you had to make from your first sport to your second sport. And I hope that you could maybe walk me through the chapters of your life, like the major headings, the things that help shape like the overall trajectory of your life, just so I could try to get an understanding of where you came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll try and make a long story short. I grew up in Vermont and I was always playing sports, baseball, soccer, basketball. I started skiing, then I broke my leg skiing and then transitioned into snowboarding.
What age did you break your leg?
I was 11 years old.
Okay, so were you aggressively skiing or were you hesitating and you broke your leg or somewhere in the middle?
I'd say somewhere in the middle. I had been a cross country skier ever since I could remember. I got up onto alpine skis just for 1 year, doing lift access alpine skiing and broke my leg. And I think when I was up on the mountain, I saw all these snowboarders. And at that time, I had been skateboarding for maybe 2 years. And so I was like, why am I not snowboarding? I'm skiing. I'm on these skis. I should be snowboarding. And then I broke my leg. After I healed the leg, the following year I got on a board and the rest was history. I was like, I love this. I couldn't think of anything else.
I don't want to gloss that over. That's a really cool thought. I couldn't think of anything else.
Yeah. It was funny because, like I said, you know, I'd always played sports, basketball, soccer, skating, you know, but I had never really been so obsessed with any of those, even soccer, which was like my second passion, you know. I had never been obsessed with any of them. Then after I got into snowboarding, that's like all I could think about was just when I was going to get up onto the hill next. Because at that point, you know, it was an after school program, which I was fortunate enough to be a part of. And then otherwise the weekends. And so I was just like, I need to get on my board more often. And eventually, as the years went on, I figured out ways to get on my board more often than just the weekends.
Okay. So looking back as an adult, looking back, what were you most attracted to or hungry for? Or what was the crave?
Back then, let's see, I was probably 13 or 14 at that point. And the crave was just It was nothing superficial. It was just the pure stoke that it gave me. And like being up, I was making all these new friends on the mountain, and just the pure joy that snowboarding gave me, you know, of just learning tricks, learning something new, and just genuinely being so happy, you know, because when you're 14 and 15, you're not thinking about bills to pay or whatnot. All you have to think about is fun. And it just, that was the funnest thing I could do at the time.
Mm, okay. And then I wonder, as an adult, as a professional athlete, as one of the best, you know, arguably that's out there right now, have you stayed connected to that, or have you had a relationship, an ebb and flow relationship with Stoke? What, like,
yeah, there has been a serious ebb and flow. And I think sometimes I get burnt out. There's no two ways about it. It's like, I'll work really hard and maybe over immerse myself in my work and my snowboarding, and I'll just be drained afterwards. And so I'm trying to learn as the years go on to maybe not go so hard so that I can maintain that stoke and, you know, not ebb and flow quite so hard. But maybe the ebb and flow is healthy. I've realized that I've tried to not be so one-dimensional in my life, and to try and learn new things and not just be a snowboarder. And I think that in return really helps me be a better snowboarder.
Okay. So is that hard work? Is that over, you know, weeks, 6 weeks, months? Like, what is that hard work, and what does the hard work look like? And then what are some of the signs that you pick up on that you're starting to slip into that fatigue or even like burnout state? And I know I just asked you three questions, but they're totally related for me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think the burnout looked like, for instance, one example would be like when I was working on a movie that I produced. It was kind of about my snowboarding. It's called Naturally. It was a 2-year project. It was originally supposed to be just a 1-year project. And we had gained funding through my sponsors for the project, and they were placing all their eggs in my basket, you know, to produce. And so there was a lot of pressure on me to produce and fulfill what I said I was going to do. And the first year of filming, about halfway through, I had a shoulder dislocation, and my shoulder just kept popping out. And then I got into my head, and I just wasn't healthy both physically and mentally to produce what I wanted to produce. And so we only got like 20%, maybe not even, of the job done. And I had to call it quits mid-March and go in for shoulder surgery. And it was a really in-depth surgery. I don't know if you're familiar with a Bankart surgery. It's torn labrum. Anyway, it's like pretty much a year turnaround until you're 100%. I got stitched up, and I got really, really focused on, I had time to kind of chill and look at the bigger picture and gain more confidence in myself while I was laid up. And I ended up coming back a little sooner than a year. I got back on my board in November or December. And that following winter, we got 80% of the film done, and it turned out to be a major success. But I think it was due to the fact that I had a really low point where I was like, oh man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to produce this and pull this all off. And my shoulder's in a bad way, my head's in a bad way. But then I had time to just chill and think about everything and get strong physically. But for me, more, it was mentally preparing for the following year. And we were able to pull it off. And so it was kind of like, I always think of it as, when I do get injured, I try and take something from the injury instead of letting the injury take something from me. And so, some, like with this little knee scope, this is so minor compared to what I had with my shoulder. But it does give me some time to look at the bigger picture and get back into the gym, get strong, get my head back on straight and take something from the injury.
What you're capturing right now is when you hit adversity, you've got a model that says, okay, I'm going to learn and grow from this rather than it take from me. And what is it that you're learning right now? Let's use this small little capture injury, and then let's go back to the shoulder, and let's go back to the when you broke your leg earlier. Let's see if we can do it in that order.
I'm taking from it that I got a little complacent over the last couple of years. I've been fortunate enough to be healthy, and therefore I wasn't maintaining my body like I should have, like a professional athlete should. Just because I was healthy, you know, I was getting by, but I wasn't really snowboarding. I'll be totally honest, like the last couple of years, the way that I want to. And I think now that I have the time to heal and look at everything, look at the bigger picture, see how fortunate I am to be in the position that I'm in, I think between just getting really strong in the gym and realizing that I did get complacent and that I need to get strong both mentally and physically, that's what I'm learning now.
Okay. And so on the mental side, what do you do to get stronger? Like, what are some of the activities or ways that you go about that?
I try and read and inspiring things. I'm not much of a reader, but I mean, with the brief little talk that we had before, you know, I was doing a lot of research on Bruce Lee. He's amazing, man. I've been reading. I got like 3 of his books.
I can't put them down. I know.
Yeah, he's unreal, man. It's so sick.
Have you read? I mean, he's got a lot of them, but have you read Artist of Life?
No, I have not.
Yeah, it's a good one. And then his daughter fired up a podcast.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. So check that out as well. Bruce Lee podcast. Yeah. I think it's pretty good.
Nice. Yeah. I think I forget the one. It's something about mastering your own body, something along that title. Anyway. So, you know, reading, just taking time, doing yoga. That was another thing after my shoulder surgery. I got super into yoga too. I went to Hawaii for a little bit to heal and got into some really good Mysore yoga classes. And above all, it just taught me to breathe and you know, it's a form of meditation, really. And so obviously I got limber, but I learned how to breathe properly. And so, you know, I'm not much of a meditator, but I do try and take some time every morning to breathe and try and find center. And then also my mom was kind of helping push me in this direction of doing some Qigong classes. She does Tai Chi. Mm-hmm. And the Qigong's kind of like a good, I'm sure you're familiar with it. It's like a good warm up in order to do your Tai Chi sets, from how I understand. And I'm just on the tip of it. I'm just starting to learn, but it's really cool to do all this qi, this energy work, this qigong work. And you'll go into the class beforehand and your hands will be all clenched and you'll be all tight. And after the class, the instructor always has me notice that my fingers are just limp and the energy's flowing out of my fingers. And it's so cool to...
Is this like a 4-minute set that you'll do of Qigong?
Yeah. The sets we do with him are normally like 15 to 20 minutes.
Okay, so a little bit longer, yeah.
Yeah, by the time the Qigong class is done, they go into Tai Chi, and I'm not there yet. I just do Qigong for now. Cool. It's really, really cool, and I want to get more into it.
Mm, okay. All right. And then what did you learn when you broke your leg at 11?
I think above all, I just learned about snowboarding. I didn't really think too hard about things at 11. I guess I just learned that I didn't want to alpine ski anymore. I wanted to snowboard.
Got it. Okay. So that was the end. Yeah. So you got your fire began at the moment of injury, really.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I was like, I got nothing against skiing. You know, skiing's great and all. I just realized that I wanted to be on a board. Yeah, and I didn't really overthink it at that point. It was just a fun outlet.
Okay, I want to talk to you about a new sponsor right here, Hydro. I love what they're doing. They are awesome. I don't know if you're into rowing like I am. I really enjoy it. What I try to do is I try to move around different cardio exercises. Sometimes on a bike, sometimes I'm rowing, sometimes I'm outside. But when I want to row, they've got it dialed in. They've done something fundamentally different than all the other rowers. One, it's not this loud machine that is making a ton of noise and, you know, chains slapping all over the place. They've done this in a really slick, premium, elevated way. And then the other thing they've done is that there's a nice screen that you can have a guide or a coach with you. And their coaches are Olympians and world-class athletes. And what they've done is they're filming, full stop, they are filming all over the world on places where their experts are rowing, and then you get to go with them. And they're coaching you the whole way. I love it. My favorite coach by far is Mac. She's great. And I just want to encourage you to give them a shot. If you love rowing, I think you're going to love this machine. And if you're not into rowing, I don't know if you know this, but rowing, there's been some research around rowing that rowing engages over 80% of your muscles while you're doing it. So it's a really efficient exercise. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to hydro.com and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's hydro.com, hydro.com, and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400. Hydro.com, use the code MASTERY. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AG1. It's really important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for almost a decade now, I've been drinking AG1. When I first was connected with them, I thought, oh, this is great. This is great. And then I double-clicked to understand their process and how they went about it. And I just love the rigor that goes into what they're creating and the product that they have. And they've gone through so many iterations to get it just right, 52 of them to be exact. Sometimes quality can be a buzzword, but they are committed. They are fundamentally committed to have a great product for us. They're interested in absorption. They're interested in high quality manufacturing. They rigorously test their product. So I trust what's in AG1. And one of the reasons I have extra confidence in that statement is they are NSF certified for sport. That's one of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certification programs in the supplement industry. They've made it so easy as well. What I do every morning is I take a scoop, put it into a cup of water, shake it up, and it's the first thing that I put in my stomach. And I love it. It just gives me the sense like, okay, I've invested in my health and I haven't even started my day yet. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, I want to encourage you to go check out AG1. So try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/findingmastery. Again, that's drinkag1.com/findingmastery. I hope you will check them out. Okay. Why Vermont? What did your parents do? What was it like growing up? Like, what brought your family to Vermont? What did they do, you know, in their waking moments?
My parents and their parents, and on my mom's side for like 5 generations, have been in Vermont. We've always been here. Growing up, we're out in the sticks. We don't have any neighbors. I mean, the closest neighbor is actually my uncle. He's a ways away through the woods. So it's very, very peaceful. My dad's a carpenter, and my mom is an interior painter. She used to have her own business of her own nursery, and so she's really good in the garden. She'd always be cooking up, you know, fresh vegetables. We always had a big vegetable garden, and so it's just pretty holistic upbringing, very chill, very fortunate middle class family.
And so how did your parents influence your path? What did they do?
I think above all, they supported whatever I wanted to do, whatever my sister and I wanted to do within, you know, if it was within the budget, within their means, they'd do whatever they could. Like, for instance, I was getting into skateboarding, and my dad's a carpenter, and he built me a mini ramp, you know? And we had the mini ramp in the backyard from when I was 14 on, and we actually just tore it down the other couple of years ago. But and then, like, when I was getting super into snowboarding, it's my junior year, and it was kind of like either really pursue this or not. And if you're going to pursue it, you got to be out west. And my parents found a host family out in Mammoth Lakes, the Beelers, and they allowed me to do homeschooling out west when I was 16 years old and live with this random, super nice family so that I could snowboard every day, you know? And they found the means to make that happen and support my dreams, you know? So they've just always been super supportive.
And it doesn't, I don't get this sense, but I don't want to make up a story in my head, but I don't get the sense that they saw young Jakey as like the star, athlete, and they would do whatever they could to get the shine and the glory for them. I don't,
No, no, yeah,
and I
yeah.
don't know why I'm picking that up, that it's not
Yeah.
that, right? Like
Yeah.
it just feels differently.
That's right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And, I
Why
think
is that?
I think above all, they just wanted me to grasp onto something positive, and they saw that snowboarding was positive for me. It was a positive outlet. And it wasn't about winning contests or anything. They just saw how stoked it made me. And at that pivotal point for teenagers, 15, 16, 17 years old, it's like, are you gonna start doing drugs or are you gonna stay clean? And what are you gonna do? Are you gonna find a niche? And it was like snowboarding was my niche, my way to not do drugs and stay focused, and so I think they just saw that it was a positive outlet, and they didn't care if I won anything or what. They just wanted to make sure I was had my head on straight.
I had a similar experience with surfing, is that I was so into it, I couldn't understand how all the other guys were ripping whatever they were ripping at night.
Right.
And then, like, it was like, great, I hope you guys get loaded because you're going to miss 6 a.m., when the sun is up and the glass is out in the water and it's perfect. Like, you're going to miss it.
Right.
So I had a very similar experience with alcohol and drugs. And it sounds like, I don't know if you used or didn't use, but it sounds like you were more into your craft than you were into drugs.
Definitely. Yeah,
Which
definitely.
I don't know if I think that that's not really that rare in surfing and snowboarding, and there's a lot of drug use.
For sure. There is. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, I think a lot of people that don't know action sports well, especially like for some reason, I'm kind of leaning towards skateboarding. Like people, old timers, they look at the skateboarders like a skate rat doing drugs and whatnot. But it's like these days, it's like it's gonna be an Olympic sport, which is for better or worse, it is. And it's just something to for the kids to do, to, instead of sitting on the couch playing video games or whatnot, it's like just get them outside, breathing some fresh air and doing something. And
So,
so.
okay, so let's try this. When you were, let's go 15, okay, so you're living out in Mammoth, California, yeah, with
Yeah.
the host family, 15, 16 in that range. How
Yep.
would your, how would your closest friends describe you? And then I want to do the same thing now, like, and see if there's any delta between the two.
So how would my closest friends describe me back then?
Yes.
Let's see, I don't know. I guess maybe pretty, I think the same for now, like fairly quiet and reserved until you get to know me. But I'd say, yeah, they're just quiet and reserved, respectful. I'm not sure, I guess. I haven't really thought about that. I hope that's what the hell they think of me.
Okay,
I'd rather
cool.
be quiet and reserved than loud and outgoing, although sometimes it pays to be outgoing for sure. It's good to be outgoing.
So it would it be fair to say that back then you were hard to get to know?
Yeah, probably. I would think so. Yeah.
And then is that, how do people describe you now?
Let's see. I think about the same, I would say. I mean, yeah, I'm not one to, if I like just meet you, I am definitely more reserved and I'm not going to go out of my way to make a joke or something. I'd rather not say anything than if I don't have anything good to say, I just won't say anything at all, you know?
Okay. And then with the good to say, is there a strong inner critic that is filtering what deems appropriate or good for you to say? Or like I'm just trying to get a sense of the inner experience for you. So can you talk about the inner critic?
Yeah, I think I would overanalyze later on. I'd think about my interactions with so-and-so and maybe I'd overanalyze and say, well, why did I say that? Well, that was stupid. I wonder what they think of me now. And maybe that's the thing, is I shouldn't care what people think of me, but I do.
Yeah. And I don't think it's that uncommon, but you know, what is the upside? What's the cost to that for you?
The cost of what people think of me?
Yeah. Or caring what they think.
Caring about what people think. I guess you're just, I would think I'm just always being hindered. I'm spending time thinking about the past and what people think of me instead of focusing on what really matters, which is the present and what you want to do, your goals and what you want to do going forward, I would think.
And then when you're in the backcountry, it's starting to make sense for me, right? It's because when you're in the backcountry and you're with a select few and a trusted few, that filter probably lifts in some way, and that critic or whatever. And then, and you get, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but then something happens, because I can't imagine that you would be an ultimate critic in the backcountry as well and still be one of the best in the world. But I can be flat out wrong.
Yeah, so, no. Yeah, it's true. I see where you're going with this, and that's totally right. And I'm just realizing it now. It's like when I'm in the backcountry, it's more of a writing in the backcountry and producing films in the backcountry is a team sport. It's a whole group effort, first and foremost, so that everyone stays safe. And so you always trust and almost always like the people you're with in the backcountry. And so therefore, I do lift that filter. And I don't care so much about what I say to them, because if they have a problem with it, I'm going to see them later and they can tell me, and I can tell them what I really meant when I said that, I guess. And yeah, it's a trust thing where they're in my inner circle when we're out there, and I fully trust them and respect them as opposed to someone that I've just met.
How do you build trust?
Through prior situations that you've been through with those people, and seeing that they pull them off maybe similar to how you would have pulled them off, or pull them off in a respectable way. And that's, at least within snowboarding, that's how I gain trust. Is like, if we get out in the backcountry and we look at a face and it's a looming convex roll with a gnarly train trap at the bottom.
Slow it all down for me. Convex roll with a, say it again.
With a train trap.
Oh, train trap. Yeah. Okay. So walk the world through what that means.
So that's kind of like, they're just dangerous features within the backcountry. And so a convex roll, normally when you're on the top of a convex roll, which is like you're on the top of a mountain and the mountain has a convex roll, meaning it slowly convex rolls over into the face that you're going to ride. So therefore, you can't see any of the face that you're going to ride. All you see is this blind roll in front of you. And then also, because it's convex, normally that's kind of where the slope, it's kind of hard to explain, but the slope is unsupported because of that convex roll. And I mean, it also matters what's at the bottom of the face, but okay. The convex roll just creates a lot of uncertainty as to where your line is going to be because you can't see it. And then if an avalanche is going to happen, it's most likely going to happen on a convex roll because it's unsupported. And then at the bottom, all a terrain trap is just like a big gully or a bunch of trees, but mainly I'd think of a terrain trap as like a gully where if a mountain face does slide, it does avalanche on you. If it all that snow piles into a gully and you get pinned in that gully and then the snow piles up on top of you in that gut, that's a terrain trap. You can, you know, be buried anywhere from 6 to 30 feet, you know, if the gully is 30 feet deep. So you just really, as opposed to the bottom of the mountain all just being open and the snow evenly dispersing out.
So okay, when you're at the top of a pitch and you're assessing a line that you can't see from your vantage point, so you can't see the convex, or you can't see, like many people would say, I can't see over the horizon, but literally you can't see the terrain under the feet that you're about to go. How do you manage your mind and your body in those experiences?
Yeah. Well, I mean, say if we're in a heli and we're heli boarding, we'll be in the heli. We'll say, oh, I want to ride that face right there. I know that I can see it's a convex roll at the top. I got to make sure that while I'm in the heli, I've got to get a good photo of the face. And make sure that I get that good photo so that when I do get dropped off on top and I can't see anything because it is that convex roll, I've at least got the picture to reassure me that there is a face below this convex roll. And hopefully sometimes, every once in a while, you can see a tree or some kind of rock feature which you can see in your photo, and you can also just barely see the tip of the tree from where you're about to drop. And so you can say, there's that tree in my photo. I can see the tree. I need to go rider's left of that. Make sure you don't go rider's right because there's a cliff and you're screwed if you go that way. Stay rider's left of that. And then from there, you're looking, you're examining your photo, and you're saying, okay, there's these other features, and you just got to remember and make sure that you're confident before you get dropped off.
Okay, what do you do for the confidence?
I just make sure that before they drop me off, that I'm 100% sure that I can ride this. And I guess it's just through getting a good photo and knowing that when you are in the heli, it's like, that's when you make the decision. You don't make the decision at the top of the run.
Oh, look at that. Okay.
You make the decision in the heli.
Okay. Yeah. So confidence for you, I mean, I love what you're saying. I would often say this to folks because I found this to be true, but I can't find research around it. You have to make up your mind. And so like with confidence, you're saying like you just make a decision. Now, that decision is based on a series of calculations and historic experiences and predictions about something that, you know, is yet to come. So there is this map that we're sorting through to be able to make the decision, I can do this, or I think I can do this pretty well, or I'm pretty sure that I can manage this. It doesn't need to be absolute, and for me at least, but maybe for you, it does need to be completely absolute. I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth again. So when you're making that decision, what are the variables that you're factoring in to be able to have enough certainty before you jump out of the heli?
First and foremost, I guess I just make sure that there are very few, I don't like to be a stuntman when I'm on my board. I try and think of myself more like an artist when I'm on my board as opposed to a stuntman. And so those are some of the things that if I look at a line and there's a point in the line where death would be certain if you were to do a wrong move there, I don't do it. So yeah, if there's looming death, I just, it's like, why would I risk my life for, like, yeah, I want to be able to ride another day. So that, definitely that. And then second to that, I just want to make sure that I have fun on the way down and that it's what I actually want to do. And I'm not doing it for anybody else, which I haven't always done for sure, but I'm trying to get better about that. It's just making sure that I'm going to have a good time on the way down. So yeah, just making sure I'm not going to die and then make sure that I have fun.
I love the laugh at the end because you know how ridiculous it is and how wonderful it is, right, all kind of mixed together, right? Yeah. Oh, I love it. Okay, so how do you make the discerning decision that, okay, I'm not going to die on this one? At the same time, it's new terrain. It's, you know, the thrill of uncharted terrain, I'm sure, is wonderful for you. Mm-hmm. And there's a pitch that you are looking to be able to, you know, some speed and pitch and all that fun stuff that for some reason you're attracted to, because you could get on the bunny hill, but you can't do the carve and the turns that you want to do. So mm-hmm. like, can you talk to me about that risk assessment, if you will?
Yeah, I think if I understand the correction or the question right, it's like, I guess I never get that feeling anywhere else in my life as when I just get to the bottom of a gnarly run and I nailed it and I'm so stoked that, you know, that I nailed what I wanted to do. I pulled it off. I had this vision and then I pulled it off. Hopefully the cinematographer and the photographer pulled it off and I did my job. But above all, it's like, it's just that adrenaline you get at the bottom of like fully being in the moment. You know, whether it's like, if it's 3,000 vertical foot run, you're like, you're riding for a minute or so, and you're just, you're not thinking about bills to pay or whatever. You're just thinking about staying on your feet, nailing your line, and just the adrenaline. And it's just like nothing else I get in my life. And it's definitely like, that's my drug.
Is there an addiction?
Yeah. Yeah, there is for sure. Yeah. It's like, I think just because I know how good it feels, that I want to keep doing that, and I want to keep my body in shape and my head in shape so that I can keep doing my addiction. Yeah.
Finding Master is brought to you by Apollo Neuro. By now, you're probably well aware that I am a huge fan of what they're doing. I love what they're building and how they're using science-backed technology to help people flourish. This is just a great technology that isn't measuring something. It's actually providing a state change for you to help you either downregulate, find a deeper sense of calm, maybe fall asleep a little bit easier. And if you want to be a bit more up and animated, they've got a way to help you do that as well. It's awesome. It works by sending silent, soothing vibrations. They call them Apollo vibes, of course. That's fun. And it's like music that you can just feel. Just like music, higher vibrations help improve your energy and focus, while lower vibrations, slower vibrations, help to reduce stress, help you relax. I use it twice a day. I use it after I do something really intense. So after it's a lift, after some fitness, after some sport, or after something I'm doing in the office. And I use it right before I go to bed. The science that they've found is fascinating. Across various real world and clinical trials, Apollo wearable users experience up to 40% less stress and feelings of anxiety. That's an average, of course. 19% more time in deep sleep, 11% increase in HRV, heart rate variability, and up to 25% more focus and concentration. Those are radical. And because you're a part of the Finding Mastery community, you're going to get an exclusive, and I mean that word here, 15% off an Apollo wearable. So just head to apolloneuro.com/findingmastery and use the code findingmastery at checkout. This is an exclusive offer only available to Finding Mastery. I love that we get to do this together. So be sure to use our code. Again, APOLLONEURO, apolloneuro.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout for 15% off your purchase. You're only getting that here. I really hope you'll check them out. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AquaTrue. We all know how important hydration is to performance and recovery and well-being, but it's not just about how much you drink. The quality of your water plays a big role. And if you're like me and you don't fully trust tap water, and I think for good reason, research by the Environmental Working Group has shown that 3 out of 4 homes in the U.S. have harmful contaminants in tap water. That's why I'm really excited to introduce AquaTrue. Their purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. It's incredible. I can literally taste the difference in my water. Plus, the filters are affordable and long-lasting. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That adds up to less than 3 cents per bottle. It feels great to know that all at once, I'm saving money, getting the highest quality water for the Finding Mastery team, and helping make a positive impact on the environment by eliminating single-use plastics all the way around. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift. And right now, because you're a Finding Mastery listener, you receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. So just go to aquatrue.com. You spell it AquaTru.com and enter the code Finding Mastery at checkout. Again, that's aquatrue.com. Enter the Finding Mastery code at checkout to receive 20% off any purifier that you buy there. I want to go back to the top of the pitch. When you're at the top, you've made the decision, and then you look down and you say, oh man, this is up in the heli. It seemed great. And so there's that little bit of doubt. Is that ever happened to you? Or I imagine it's had to have, and I'd love to know how you work that out, because you've got options. Hey, start waving your hands, come back.
Right.
You know, I made a mistake. That's one, yeah. But right. there's some social pressures around that you have to sort out. And early on in your career, that was probably tougher than it is now. So you could wave your arms and have, or not literally, I know you got a walkie, yeah. But you could have them come back and pick you up, or you can try to work your mind out in that moment when your legs are shaking, if they shake. And so can you talk to me about that moment of trepidation, or when you're wondering if you miscalculated?
Yeah. Sometimes when you get on the face and say that the snow isn't like how you had thought it would be, like on the previous face you had just ridden, you know, say that the snow is much worse on this face you've gotten on, and you're like, oh man, is it going to get better further down you get, or it feels a little punchy, or yeah, sometimes you just have to fully call it and be like, nope, I can't do this. You got to come and pick me up. But a lot of the time, on a lot of drops, it's easier for them to drop you off than it is for them to pick you up with the heli. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes there isn't the option to get picked back up. And that's when you really need to be like 100% confident. But as far as like, yeah, working through it, I think, yeah, how do I do that? I guess I just try and have the confidence in myself and know that when I was assessing the line, I made sure I did my checklist. You know, I'm not going to die. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to do my job. And it's kind of nice sometimes to have that doubt and say, nope, I'm confident in myself. I'm going to do it. You get down, and then it's almost like an even better feeling when you did have that doubt at the top, but then you worked through it and you got to the bottom, and you're like, holy, the adrenaline's even more so than if you just get dropped off and you're like, oh yeah, 100%, I got this, you know, no problem.
Yeah. Okay. So are there some go-to sentences or statements or strategies that you use in those moments to try to, when you feel like literally you're over your skis?
Yeah. As far as like a mantra or anything like that, I don't really have any mantra or anything I do before I drop in. I guess I just try and clear my head and take some big, deep breaths. And that's all I really do. And just feel confident that you're going to have a good time on the way down. Yeah, if that answers your question.
Okay. Yeah, good. Yeah. Okay, good, good, good. All right. So what I think we're tracking down is like, how do you train and front load your mental skills and toughness to be able to do difficult things that have real danger? And so it sounds like some of the things you're doing are practices like, you know, yoga or qigong or breathing work. And, you know, it sounds like you have great awareness of your dialogue and your inner dialogue. And you also are sorting out risk assessments using technology and also, you know, probably talking to other people about the scenario. And mm-hmm. once you make a decision, and that's all leading up to be able to make clear decisions. And then once you make the decision, then the next phase is more about committing to it. And then once you commit to it, it feels like you're searching for an artistic expression rather than something just radical.
Right.
Okay. So can you walk me through that artistic expression piece versus what you see some other guys do that are more like, I think the language you used was more of a stunt man or woman, which is like hucking.
Right.
Yeah. So can you walk me through that a little bit?
I try and ride natural terrain within snowboarding. And so it's pretty much just taking the mountain as it is and riding what the mountain gives you, as opposed to a lot of snowboarders and skiers. They'll go out and they'll find a nice steep landing and they'll build a jump. You know, they call it a cheese wedge. It looks like a wedge of cheese that they put right mm-hmm. before the rollover into that steep landing. And they'll do, you know, they'll build a jump for 3 or 4 or 5 hours, sometimes days. And then they'll huck off from it into the landing and it's not stuntman stuff. It's sick stuff. I like it. And I've done it before. I'll do it again for sure. But for me, like I said, I try and think of myself more as like an artist out there. And each face you get to, you look at it and you see all these different lines down the mountain and all these things to air off from and places to do slashes. And every year the face fills in different, every storm the face fills in different. And so you can just kind of take that, like your creativity is your limit, you know, and there's no right or wrong way to snowboard. You know, if you just want to go out and build cheese wedges and do that, that's sick, man, as long as you're having fun. But for me, it's more about getting to a new face, a new mountain, a new location, and just seeing how you can work with kind of what Mother Nature's given you and try and have a good time and inspire others.
Okay. So what has been the cost or some of the dark side of pursuing your craft? What have been the challenges that you faced?
Injuries, I guess. And then for me, maybe for like my discipline and you know, backcountry kind of freestyle natural terrain riding, sometimes it's really difficult to make those things look good. You know, it's hard to find proper airtime when you're not building a jump. You're just working with what nature's given you. And so sometimes, you know, there's maybe people don't appreciate what I'm doing. If you don't know how hard it is to actually flow down a mountain and work with just what is given to you, as opposed to like, you know, you build a jump, you air 100 feet and anyone's going to think that's sick, but that's just not for me. So I guess if that's a setback, you know, but I mean, the most obvious is injuries. Yeah. Mm,
yeah. And you've had them. That's for sure.
Yeah, okay. Definitely had them. Yep.
Is there let's talk about philosophy for a minute. Is there a phrase that guides your life?
I'd say As of late, just kind of like flow like water, you know, and just be like water, kind of like Bruce Lee style.
My friend, be like, be water, my friend.
Yeah, be
It's just
water.
such a classic line.
Yeah, because I
Yeah.
mean, it's so true. It's like it's so powerful and can carve canyons, you know, but at the same time, it's so soft and just flows. And, you know, it's like I was even thinking of doing that for a board graphic for one of my boards for next year, is like somehow incorporating water into it. And I'm not much of a water person, you know, so it might kind of be weird, but just being like water, it's strong but soft at the same time. I think that's really resonated with me lately.
Okay. And then is there a word or phrase that cuts to the center of what you understand most?
I'd say just be kind, you know. I
Yeah.
think, yeah, I think that our world could use a lot of that, a lot more of that these days. And never has it ever done me wrong in my life. It's just being kind, you know. Sometimes it's like it feels like you got to be a dick in order to get your way or something, but it's never worked for me. It's always just kind of worked to just be kind and try and see one of that person's side of the story, whether they're, you know, a Republican, Democrat, liberal, whatever. It's like, yeah, you've got your point and I've got mine, and that's okay. Just be nice, be kind.
Was there a particular moment in time when you realized that kindness was incredibly important for you?
Yeah, I would say when my wife, when her father unexpectedly passed away 5 or 6 years ago, just one day he was healthy in there and the next day he wasn't. But he was such a kind and brilliant, awesome dude. And that will just always live on with us, is how kind and smart and giving he was, and we'll never think a bad thing of him. We'll just think of how awesome he was like that. And so it's like when, yes, yeah, I guess when you're, yeah, it's like you couldn't just not be there one day. And how do you want to be remembered, you know?
So when you are not kind to yourself, the inner critic, how do you work through that? Like what do you do to get back to kindness?
I look at the bigger picture and always try and feel grateful for the amazing life that I've been given. And so, yeah, when I find myself in a rut or being negative, it's like, come on, man. Like, are you kidding me? Look at your life. Like, look at how much you have to be fortunate for.
Okay, cool. And then, so that begs the question, it laced in there is like you said, what you've been given. What is your spiritual framework? Is it deity based? Is it non-deity based? Like, what, talk through that, because what I heard, like what you've been given, that there's maybe this underlying thought that God has given you stuff, but I don't want to assume anything.
No, yeah. I'm not religious at all. If anything, I try and I'm more and more spiritual as the years go on, for sure. But I guess if anything, I just believe in energy and, you know, and acts of forms of energy, whether it be, you know, kindness, love, and anger, and all that. I think that if anything, my religion is kind of, for me, it's like my spirituality is based on energy flowing in and out of all of us and around us.
Okay. And then is it because mom and dad weren't, didn't have a religious foundation or framework, or they did and you were turned away from it? Like what was your relationship like early on with religion? And there's no critique. This is all curiosity. Yeah.
No, they weren't religious at all. I've actually, honestly, I've never been to church in my life. I've been in a couple churches, but never for a proper sit down. They didn't put any ideas into my head other than being kind. Yeah. And, yeah. Being nice and doing the best you can do.
Cool. When my son was born, my wife and I sat down, this was a number of years ago, and we sat down and we said, okay, you make a list and I'll make a list. And let's see if we can come up with like the attributes that are most important to, as a parent, for us to shape and mm-hmm. to do our best, you know, to instill. And it was two words. It was kind and strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And so, the combination. Okay. So I want to go back to risk taking really quickly. You make a lot of decisions in your job that involve risk. And I'm just curious, what is by far the greatest risk you've taken? It doesn't need to be on the mountain. Like it might be, but like, what is the greatest risk that you've taken?
I guess spending time away from my wife and, we don't have kids yet, but, spending time away from my wife and my family back in Vermont, you know, that's, I'd say the greatest risk is like what I noticed it a couple of years ago. It's like when I come back after a long winter, everyone's a little bit older, including myself. And it's just kind of, for me, it's a little risky spending that much time away from the ones that you love.
When you go away and you come back, are you different?
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely. Yeah.
And are they different?
Yeah. I mean, a little bit. I noticed the difference more in myself than them, but I think that that we're both different. But as far as what I've learned on the road, and normally it's always a sense of gratefulness when I come back from a trip and being like, wow, like this is the life that I get to live, like. They live great lives where I just was, don't get me wrong, but I don't want to live like that. I want to live like I live here in Vermont and then on the West Coast in Washington, you know, it's like, yeah. So I think it's just feeling very fortunate a lot of the time when I get back from trips.
Mm, okay. And then, so how about this? Where does pressure come from for you?
Always from myself. I've always been really hard on myself. And I think that that's helped push me to be fairly successful, but, the pressure just, it comes first and foremost from myself. I just always expect way too much from myself. And then, you know, there's always pressure from sponsors and whatnot, but that's really not nearly the pressure that I put on myself. Sometimes I just work way too hard and I'm trying, like I said earlier, I'm trying to kind of balance that and maybe not put 110% in, maybe just put 90 and see if maybe that works out a little better. So the pressure comes from me.
Okay. And how would you answer this? It all comes down to
being happy and being true to yourself and the ones you love. And it all comes down to doing the best you can do.
Mm. Okay. Success is
being content and happy. It always kind of comes back to happiness. I just want to be happy.
All right. In your words, how do you think about or define or articulate mastery?
To define mastery, I would say it's like flowing effortlessly and having, not copying anyone's style with whatever skill you're trying to master. It's more just being you, you know, having your own style, or, you know, back to Bruce Lee, not having any style at all. But for me, it's like you're never going to be better than that person's style. That's their style. So, you know, be a master at your own style and the way that you do it, and just flow through it. And then also being able to teach, you know, like there's a lot of people who are so good, but they don't know how to articulate, like how to teach someone how to be better at whatever they want to be. So I think between just having your own unique style, your own genuine style, and flowing effortlessly with that style, and then being able to pass it on to someone else, shows mastery to me.
I knew you'd bring it. I knew you'd bring it, Jake. Okay, I love it. Okay, so seriously, Jake, thank you for your time. And thank you for, you know, lending your years of operating in dangerous and risk and passionate environments that are, you know, just an amphitheater for wonderful expression of art. And your movies that you've created are phenomenal, and as well as the way you've articulated what's within you. So with that, where can people learn more about what you're up to?
Let's see. You can, well, first off, let me just say thank you, man. Thank you so much for taking the time. And yeah, you've really opened my eyes to a lot of my life that I didn't even know that was there. So thank you.
Cool. That's fun. Yeah, that's good.
Let's see, I've got the movie Naturally on Netflix. And then otherwise, you can just, you know, Google my name, or YouTube. Everything's on YouTube. All the Snowboarder Magazine movies that I've been working on lately, they're all just online, ready for viewing pleasure.
Beautiful. And what's your Instagram handle?
It is Jake_Blauvelt. So JAKE_BLAUVELT.
Okay. So looking forward to be connecting with you on social. I know there's going to be lots of great questions that folks are going to have. We've got a Finding Mastery community that we pulled together called the Tribe. And it's been a blast. And they're switched on and they're supporting and challenging each other on the path of mastery. So I know there's going to be a lot of questions. And if you're interested in folks that are listening, if you're interested in being part of that, punch over to our website, which is findingmastery.net. And then click on the invite for community. And Trevor Baru, our producer, will help get you connected there. And then, so thank you. And for those who are new to the conversation, head over to iTunes. If you like this and you like Jake's stuff, head over to iTunes, find Finding Mastery. Head over to Facebook, head over to Instagram for Jake, and follow what he's up to. Download his movie on Netflix called Naturally. And then you can find us at Finding Mastery on Instagram and on Twitter. It's at Michael Gervais, G-E-R-V-A-I-S. And Jake, wonderful. Look forward to connecting with you. And this is, it's a gift. So thank you.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike. Really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure, man.
Yeah. All the best. Take care. Yeah,
take care, okay, man.
Bye.
Take
care. All right. Thank you so much for diving into another episode of Finding Mastery with us. Our team loves creating this podcast and sharing these conversations with you. We really appreciate you being part of this community. And if you're enjoying the show, the easiest no-cost way to support is to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening. Also, if you haven't already, please consider dropping us a review on Apple or Spotify. We are incredibly grateful for the support and feedback. If you're looking for even more insights, we have a newsletter we send out every Wednesday. Punch over to findingmastery.com/newsletter to sign up. This show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, and we take our recommendations seriously. And the team is very thoughtful about making sure we love and endorse every product you hear on the show. If you want to check out any of our sponsor offers you heard about in this episode, you can find those deals at findingmastery.com/sponsors. And remember, no one does it alone. The door here at Finding Mastery is always open to those looking to explore the edges and the reaches of their potential so that they can help others do the same. So join our community, share your favorite episode with a friend, and let us know how we can continue to show up for you. Lastly, as a quick reminder, information in this podcast and from any material on the Finding Mastery website and social channels is for information purposes only. If you're looking for meaningful support, which we all need, one of the best things you can do is to talk to a licensed professional. So seek assistance from your healthcare providers. Again, a sincere thank you for listening. Until next episode, be well. Think well and keep exploring.